Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
As new risks arise in severity and frequency around the world, ethics and compliance programs are actually focused on their risk mitigation efforts. This is a key theme of LRN's brand new 2024 Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report. And this report actually features global data and insights from more than 1,400 ethics and compliance professionals. According to our research, values-based programs are not only the most effective, but they also correlate strongly with reduced risk and better business outcomes. So the question is, how are E&C programs, how are ethics and compliance programs in regions like Germany evolving in response to this increasingly complex risk landscape? And what do these global best practices look like for programs in that region on a daily basis? Hello and welcome to LRN's Principled Podcast. I'm your host, Frances Abekwe, Senior E&C Advisor at LRN. And today, I'm really pleased to say that I'm joined by Gernot Tolle, the Head of Legal and Compliance at Vita 34 AG in Leipzig, Germany. And we're going to be discussing key findings from the German edition of the 2024 Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report, and how those key findings apply to programs in that region. So Gernot, firstly, thank you for joining me on the Principled Podcast. It's great to have you. Could you start by telling our listeners a little bit about Vita 34 and also your role within the organization?
Yeah, Frances, thanks for having me in the LRN Principled Podcast today. I have joined Vita in May 2023, so last year, and I'm responsible to build up the legal and compliance function for the capital group. Vita is in the business of prior conservation of human stem cells from cord blood, cord tissue, and also from placenta tissue. Plus, we're engaged in treatments and base products made out of stem cell for the pharmaceutical industry. And in Germany, cord blood and cord tissue, cord blood especially is considered a prescription drug. So at least in Germany, we're in one of the most heavily regulated industries, which is very interesting from a compliance perspective.
That's definitely sound very interesting. So it's definitely great to speak with you in terms of your background and the role that you're doing. And so, you know, I just wanted to dive straight in terms of looking at one of the themes that we found in the report for this year. And we actually found that a foundational concept within ethics and compliance programs is that their ethical behavior is actually primarily driven by values. That notion seems to have gathered substantial momentum over the years. And based on our comprehensive global data set, we actually found that 77% of E&C professionals affirm that their organizations prioritize values over rules, and that's to inspire ethical conduct. And that actually marks a significant increase of 27% since LRN initially posed this question back in 2016. I just want to put that into further context because, for example, we found that for German E&C programs, they are indeed adopting a values-driven approach, whereby 82% of organizations' ethical culture has grown stronger as a result of navigating challenges. So when we look at this focus on values in E&C programs, I just wondered, you know, how this trend resonates with your perspective.
That's two of my favorite buzzwords in compliance, rules and values. And obviously, most programs start with rules and develop to value-based programs. And the speed of doing that depends on the situation that the company is basically in. So it's always a question, what part of the journey you are in, and all programs that are kind of developed will try to move further to value-based programs while you cannot do away with rules. That's also the interesting part. I mean, looking at rules, they are written down in policies. And well, not everybody likes policies in companies. That's one of the weak points of compliance departments. We kind of write policies and hand them out and then try to enforce them. And it's one thing that you need to have the policies, and then how are they lived? So I've had the question a lot of times to myself, who is actually reading my policies? Am I the only person that is reading that? Or is it only the compliance help desk that is responding to those calls? So oftentimes when I was asked a question relating to a policy, I would simply pick up the policy on the phone and do some assisted reading with the person asking me those questions. And then you can usually find that answer. It would be a lot nicer if they could come up with the answer by themselves by having the right values that we are trying to bake into that policy as the core. From that perspective, it very much depends on where you are in that journey from rule-based to value-based. But the only thing that you probably cannot do, what is very difficult, is you cannot completely leave out the rule-based part. Even if you had a completely value-based organization, you would be safe. You would always do the right thing, but you forget that there is a regulator. So especially if you're stock listed with all the ESG reporting that you have nowadays, auditors will want to see the policy, and then they will look into, well, what are the actions? What are the metrics, the KPIs and stuff like that? So you can't do without the policy. You need the policy. So from that perspective, it's probably also a trend that I can see that policies become shorter and crisper, and to try to fill them in the interpretation by the values, and to try to empower the workforce to make certain decisions on their own based on their values. And if they still have questions, they come to you and ask you. And obviously, you cannot solve every case, every question in a policy, because that would simply become too long a document, and people stop reading that after a certain point in time.
Definitely agree with those points. Definitely nodded my head as you spoke. And, you know, in fact, you know, when you talk about policies and having kind of clearer policies, it's definitely much in the vein of having policy simplification and programs looking at that. And in fact, when you talk about not divorcing the rules from the values, you know, another finding that we had, you know, for the German ENC report was that the high impact programs, those programs that are doing better than their peers, you know, they saw ethics on the one hand, so your values, and compliance on the other hand, your rules, as integral and essential to each other, and didn't really distinguish between them. And that was at a rate of 41%. So that really aligns with your thoughts on that point. And I just want to dive a bit deeper, Gernot, in terms of looking at, you know, some further insights from the 2024 reports. There were many of them. And, you know, based on the German edition, you know, I just wondered, you know, which other key findings, you know, resonated with you.
I think one of the findings that kind of picked my attention was that ENC programs are scaling their efforts globally. And that's also what I'm trying to do at my organization. And what's always the most delicate part of the compliance officer is to pick the right balance to adopt the regulations to your organization, to find the right level. And that depends on, let's say, the external factors. So in the past, I've been working for organizations that have been under a DOJ compliance monitorship. So things move extremely fast in that situation, and you might build up a program which is very, very robust, and you might go overboard. You might have overlaps, and then that scaling means you scale it down. You try to reduce it using a risk-based approach to fit it really to the needs. In the normal case, when you're not under that pressure, you're trying to build that up slowly, and when you take a risk-based approach, you maybe start with a sample group. You take the highest risk, run it there as a pilot, run it in one of the entities, and then expand it to other areas. And you try to use your learnings and also your technology to make things more comprehensible and easier to digest for the organization. So ideally, you would build in compliance. So the buzzword here is compliance by design. you try to design rules and processes, regular business processes, in a way that people cannot do but to respect certain rules, and they won't even see or feel that this is a compliance policy that is trying to kind of steer them away from trouble.
That's a great point in terms of, you know, I think this seems to touch upon, you know, another finding in our report concerning, you know, risk management, that theme in terms of kind of thinking about how to roll things out, how to roll your compliance program out. And risk management was another one of the top priorities for 2024 that we found for German ENC programs. In fact, around about 45% of programs on average had risk management as one of the top priorities. And, you know, I think you had touched upon, yes, this scaling of global, scaling efforts globally, but also, you know, trying to strike that balance between the global and the local implementation of the ENC program. Did you have any further thoughts on that, you know, for example, from a risk management perspective?
Yeah, basically, compliance risk management is on the basis of any compliance management system. You need to know your organization and identify the risks in order to build up, let's say, the right policy landscape, organization, and then also the controls around it. So that's an integral part of compliance management systems, but it's also an integral part of any business operation. And the entities in Germany are required to have risk management systems from a financial perspective. And most of the compliance aspects also at the end have a financial impact. So if you have an investigation or fraud, this will show in your balance sheet. So it will become part of your kind of financial risk management. The big opportunity here is to have an integrated risk management system that is looking at the different risk areas, so social, governance, also environmental risks, that you only do the stock taking once and not have, let's say, the finance organization run their risk management system and then the compliance management organization run their own, because that will be perceived as inefficient. So it's important for the compliance function to align very well with the other assurance functions and to make sure you don't double the effort for the colleagues concerned in identifying the risks, measuring and updating, because, I mean, let's face it, this burden on the organization, but it's also worth doing it. And this is part of the role of the compliance department to explain why it is worthwhile to do this, because at the end of the day, this will save the company money. And that means you have more opportunities to expand or pay dividends or whatever. So it's a healthier company at the end of the day. So I see that integration as a great opportunity, again, to let compliance a little bit disappear as a standalone tool, but to integrate it into the regular business operations so it becomes automatically DNA of the operations of the company.
And, you know, on that point, in terms of your thoughts on the 2024 report, were there any other points that you wanted to discuss in terms of any findings that resonated with you, Gernot?
Well, I think there was a mention made of, let's say, increasingly complex regulations. And I think that's a challenge that all the compliance departments have nowadays. Even if you have a stable program and then management is often kind of inclined to say, well, this is now up and running, so you can scale down, you need less people, you have automized it. But on the other hand, you get more and more regulations, even though the national legislator might have the policy to do away with one law if they introduce one new law. But let's face it, if you have a new law, you need somebody that needs to read it, interpret it, apply it to your organization, see if you need to put it into some kind of policy, change a process, make sure how to operationalize it. I mean, it's easy to say we can show it in our systems and monitor it, but there is, let's say, the machine room of the compliance department that is working with a lot of data. So let's not forget, you need to connect all those data points in order to be able to monitor and get feedback to be able to say, well, if you're actually handling that situation. So any change will cost manpower, resources, and time. And that is often forgotten in this changing environment where I would say the requirements are kind of getting higher and higher week by week.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, in fact, in terms of, you speak about increasingly, you know, complex regulations, we found that for the German ENC programs, having to navigate obstacles to their program effectiveness, such as those increasingly complex regulations, it was about 60% of programs on average that had to do that. And, you know, that kind of takes us to a point where we can pause and just kind of think about, you know, were there any areas that were like flagged for improvement within the report? And we found that while it's been promising that, you know, compliance programs have it on their radar that they need to really respond and deal with issues such as complex regulations that are coming up, there was a noticeable area for improvement in terms of management. And there was actually a widening gap between leadership on one hand and middle management on the other hand, concerning how they implement ENC practices. So in Germany, this gap stood at about 37%, whereby executive and senior leaders on one hand were actually twice as likely as middle managers to apply company values in making difficult decisions. And that was, you know, a really large disparity. And it wasn't just unique to Germany. It's actually unique across all of our findings, across our reports. You know, it's a gap aligned with our global data. And it did surpass the figure for the gap at the UK level. That's about 29% between middle managers and executive leaders, on the other hand. And also for the Nordic region, the gap was about 31% between them. But that gap is still there. So I just wanted to kind of connect with you and just understand if you were surprised by that trend and how you would recommend that ENC leaders in Germany address this issue.
I don't know. I have not perceived it in my own experience, but I can only speculate. If we're talking about values on the rise, that means that this comes from the C level, where the compliance departments basically need to kind of connect in order to get the highest buy-in and to roll this out. So it might be that C levels are much closer to the topic because they have been discussing this and setting this up. And it's a matter of the middle management to basically, well, copy, let's say, the values in practice. So they need to observe what their managers are doing. And, you know, any kind of change takes time, and cultural change takes even longer. So this is not a matter of months, it's years. So if you change something at the top, if you implement the values, it's not enough to just put them in your code of conduct and put it on your website. But this is something that you need to practice on a daily basis. And that can be done by the compliance departments. We can run trainings. But my philosophy is that compliance is a leadership task, and that any leader should be able to train others in the organization. So they need to be able to explain, let's say, the rules that are applicable to their work environment. And if their peers hear it from them, that they can translate compliance requirements or situations that are relevant for the team, they will listen more than to the compliance officer that comes around twice a year with a training. I think that the boss has always more street credibility. So when I do trainings, I usually try to team up with one of the business people and tell them what topics I want them to discuss and to see differences. Some people can do this automatically. They have basically embraced, let's say, the values, and they have the tools in their repertoire to solve topics and also to moderate a discussion on those topics. And that's where I would like to be at the end of the day, because the compliance officer, the compliance organization cannot be everywhere and train everybody all the time. So you need multipliers and that. So I'm happy to see if, let's say, the C level feels more comfortable to speak about that and apply values. But I would expect that the number in the middle management will go up as time goes by. And compliance is the leadership task. It's the tone at the top, the tone from the top. They need to be able to talk about it, and then it will develop into the tone at the middle throughout the whole organization. And I mean, what is most harmful, obviously, is you have people that have the tone at the top, but they do not act like it. And that is very closely observed by everybody else. And then all the rules, all the trainings are not really helpful. And then the rest of the organization might not follow because they don't see that this is a kind of lift by example.
You know, again, I'm just nodding my head, you know, and really kind of brings a smile to my face when you talk about that leadership, that tone from the top again, because that really does align with our findings. You know, one of the findings we had for the 2024 German report was that, you know, programs, ENC programs are generally focusing on having an active board of directors. And what does that mean? You know, having a board of directors who actually also receive ongoing periodic ENC training. So that really does align with, you know, what you're saying in terms of the leaders then receiving that training and then cascading that through the business and leading by example. And, you know, in terms of the findings in this report, you know, it's really encouraging to hear that they align with the industry, with the work that you're doing. And I just wanted to understand if there are any practical ways and the other ways that your organization intends to tackle some of these trends that we're finding in 2024.
I can only speak about kind of my current role. And as I mentioned in the beginning, this is quite a new role. And the task is to build up the legal and compliance department from scratch, which is a nice thing to do because you have almost like a greenfield activity. But on the other hand, you don't know what to do first. So there's a lot of things to do. While if you are in an organization that had a compliance organization for a longer time, you will be more looking at details. So from that perspective, I think my situation might be somewhat special. But still, I mean, the company I'm in is a German Aktiengesellschaft. We're stock listed at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange in Prime Standard. So basically, we have to apply the same rules internally as all the really large corporations do. And we're like 750 employees worldwide. So that's really a challenge to scale this down, to still meet the requirements, but to not overburden the organization with too many policies, restrictions. And there's only so much that the organization can digest at one point in time.
Yes, definitely. I hear you on that. You know, I think that takes us quite neatly into something else I wanted to discuss with you, which is that, look, you know, this year signifies the 10th anniversary of LRN's Ethics and Compliance Program Effectiveness Report. You know, we've been doing this for 10 years, and throughout this decade-long journey, we've highlighted numerous areas where programs can enhance their effectiveness and reinforce core components, including risk mitigation, value-centric approaches that we've spoken about, and also, you know, putting into practice ENC across organizational levels, you know, and also incentivizing ethical conduct. And looking ahead, I just wondered, you know, which advancements do you anticipate ENC programs addressing in the upcoming year, or even over the next 10 years?
Yeah, looking into my crystal ball, what can I tell you? I mean, technology is obviously one of the big topics with all the artificial intelligence. There will be a lot of changes kind of in support of how the compliance departments operate, the tools that they use, but also there is ethical challenges around the use of that technology. I mean, it's developing so quickly that it's hard to keep track of those developments. So that will be quite a challenge. I don't know if the technological development will slow down at some point, but and then organizations might be very far from each other. So there's big companies that have a big focus that work a lot with those technologies, big telecommunication providers. And then you still have, let's say, the old school companies that have a traditional business model that are not so technology driven. For them, the divide will become quite big. That's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be interesting. And you mentioned ESG. I think that's one of the topics that a lot of the compliance officers have on their desk nowadays, in at least in Germany, depending on the size of the company. So they either need to report on NFRD this year already or CSRD next year. But this will come, and this will be the huge effort to kind of collect data, interpret data, and then you cannot have a standstill from 1 year to the next year and report the same numbers again, but you will need to demonstrate to the capital market that you're getting better, that you have a plan to change things, and you need to prove that you do. So this is going to put pressure on the compliance organization, but also on the management. And what you said earlier, the C-level and the boards, they will need to professionalize in that area, gain expertise. And that is also regulated by laws, what their kind of role is and their qualifications are. In Germany, I mean, the big impact was from the Wirecard scandal. So the requirements on the personal skills of board members, and in Germany, we have the predominantly the two-tier board system for the C-level and also for supervisory boards is rising. Plus, they need to also monitor ESG, so they need to be aware of those topics as well. So that is quite a development, and we'll see quite some upskilling on a lot of levels for a lot of people in order to comply with, let's say, what the rules say and also what is needed in order to move companies forward. I mean, if we're looking at the environmental impacts, there is agendas, national agendas and global agendas that we want to live up to. And it starts, well, at home and in your company. And you need to embrace this and not only treat this as a chore that you have to do, but you really don't want to.
You know, there's definitely tie in with the findings that we had in the report. So I'm pleased that you've picked those up in your crystal ball. And, you know, just even, for example, on the point of AI, yes, you know, German ENC programs are beginning to have that on their radar because they are focusing on that as a key area. I think it was about 31% of programs. And, you know, that aligns with legislation that we have coming in, the EU AI Act, that's in on the fundamental rights and AI system safety risks. And then you talk about ESG and talk about having to focus on things at the home level, but also, you know, further afield. And, you know, we see the German Supply Chain Act, which covers human rights and environmental obligations, and also the EU's new European sustainability reporting standards and corporate environmental disclosures. And so, as I said, you know, please that you're focusing on those and looking at those areas, and we'll have those on your radar. And, you know, Gernot, thank you so much for sharing your insights in this report. It's really been great having you on the podcast and speaking with you. And I really hope that you'll come back and speak with us again soon. And I just wanted to say that for everybody, my name is Frances Abekwe, and I want to thank you all for tuning into the Principal Podcast by LRN.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.